Hey, bub, I'm the best I am. I'm the best there is at what I do, and what I do isn't very nice. A terrible slogan for a barber, but a fantastic one for Wolverine. That's right, in this episode of the Comic Book Exchange, we're breaking down everything you need to know about that Canadian Logan. Let's do it.
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Comic Book Exchange here on Book Circle Online. Of course, this is the show where we talk to the creators, and we also talk amongst ourselves about all those great graphic periodicals that make their way to your local comic shop every single Wednesday, whether you go there in person or you buy them digitally, and they just treat your eyeballs to a lot of entertainment. I'm one of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie.
And I am Lex Michael, all over social media at TheLexMichael.
I should also, I'm also on the Instagram, guys. If you just want to follow me on Instagram, you can do that too at HappyGoJackie.
Lump it all in.
Yeah, I got to get my gram game strong.
We're all inclusive here.
That's right. Get
all
my
platforms.
Gram going. Now, of course, folks, you can always like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Lex, you can see right now, look a little peaked. And the reason for that is that cup is a little empty of 5 stars.
A little empty. I need my nourishment. I'm a grown boy.
That's his only sustenance in life is your 5-star reviews.
I don't eat. I don't drink water. I don't even breathe air. It's all 5-star reviews all the time. Without it, I will literally waste away.
Please don't let us lose Lex Michael. He's a national treasure. So you can also subscribe to the YouTube channel and hop in the chat too if you have anything you want to share about Wolverine and his affiliation with the X-Men, Avengers, various other people there in the Marvel Universe. If you're watching this later, when you're not watching it live, you can also comment down below as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts too. So before we hop into Wolverine, we're going to do a couple little round robin here of some latest comic book stories. First off, of course, on March 7th, I believe Netflix is releasing Iron Fist.
Yes.
Their latest series there on there. So they kind of round out the four core defenders.
It's still super jarring to me that when you Google Iron Fist, it comes up as Iron Fist Marvel Netflix web series. Like, I find it very disorienting that now the internet and streaming has become so synonymous with television that it's essentially the same thing. We're seeing productions on that scale that are still technically web shows. It's weird. It's like it's hard to reconcile in my brain, but I'm excited.
True. Certainly, before then, I mean, you throw an Iron Fist, it would take you to a totally different site.
Yes.
Not family friendly.
Yeah. Not. No. 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 Not friendly. This is my dreams. Not friendly for my dreams either.
No. That's true. But a new Iron Fist series. Now, of course, currently he's right now in Power Man and Iron Fist.
Yes.
They're going to be ending that series and kind of breaking them both off into individual series. With Luke Cage getting his own solo series, as well as Danny Rand, Mr. Iron Fist, getting his own series. And then Brian Michael Bendis is doing a Defender series, which will have Luke Cage, Danny Rand, Matt Murdock as Daredevil, and of course Jessica Jones, all four of them to kind of correspond with the Netflix series coming out later this year.
Yes, it's a 2017. We are not sure exactly when. My guess would be fourth quarter, probably, since they're shooting now and they got to do a lot of post on it. But this makes, of course, a ton of sense to launch new books featuring these characters at this time. And Bendis is brilliant. I mean, Bendis is exactly, and he's a big name. He's a big name for comic book fans, and even non-comic book fans might go, "Oh yeah, I've heard of that guy."
Yeah.
So that's a great. Obviously a great choice to helm a Defenders book. Timing makes perfect sense. I'm excited.
Now, this is Iron Fist as a solo character. Do you like him better when he's with Luke Cage? Do you enjoy him more if he's just a solo operative?
So the Iron Fist story that I have read that I enjoy the most was the one that Brubaker and Matt Fraction did.
Yes.
Which is a great, great, excellent story. And I think that to me was the story that proved definitively, oh, okay, like there are wonderful, modern, very modern takes on this character. And there are stories to be told here. But for me, Danny Rand instantly becomes 10 times more interesting when you put him next to Luke Cage. And I think to a certain extent, the same is true for me of Luke. I think those two characters bring out the best parts of each other's personality, even when within the story, they're maybe not bringing out the best in each other as partners.
Very true. You know, it's, I mean, I am such a sucker for Iron Fist. I've the look of him. I mean, it's a very 70s look, but man, the original costume, it was a cool, awesome yellow popped collar there on
the back. That's right. Yep.
Oh, so cool that, you know, just gotta
it's a sash thing that's like open down to his navel.
Got a deep V, man. It got a deep V. It's the rock that sweet tat that he's got going on. But John Byrne and Chris Claremont, they had a nice long run on there when Iron Fist got spun off into his own series. that went in 16 issues, I believe. In fact, the last issue is the one that introduced, or maybe 15. The last one was the introduced that Sabretooth into the Marvel Universe.
Really?
Yeah, who spun out of that to become a much bigger part of the X-Men franchise.
See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, your first introduction to Sabretooth, Iron Fist number 15.
Huh.
There you go.
Okay, but now the other thing, though, that's interesting to me is Iron Fist has had his own book at a number of different times, but it feels like never for all that long at once.
I think he's struggled. The same thing, like we think about, like, Namor, the Submariner.
Sure.
I mean, a really cool character, but has a hard time holding a series for any length of time. And even, like, Luke Cage, to an extent. It's hard to hold a series as well. These characters are really awesome, but they don't keep their series. And it's a struggle, because I don't... Yeah, and it's like, speaking for me, it's like, I love the series, but I also have to realize, I guess I'm just one reader amongst, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands.
Right.
So who may not really like, man, he's cool, but I don't care about a series about him. But it frustrates me because there are characters that I feel like are neglected.
Well, there are a lot of characters that even Doctor Strange goes long periods of time without having his own book. Like right now, the currently running Doctor Strange title, I think they're on issue 17 or 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, wow, look at them go. They're really getting out there. That's great.
And I feel like that's got to do in such large part to Jason Aaron. If you put a really strong creator on it, because I think if you saw, like, with the previous Iron Fist series, where, as you were talking about, Ed Brubaker and Matt Fraction did it.
And that was Immortal Iron Fist, correct?
Yes. Yeah. David Aja doing the art for that.
Yes.
Just, man, that was such a solid creative team. And the stories are so great that really had a lot of heat on it. But then, of course, they moved on to other projects. And then you bring in another writer. And then, even though the story was good, it lost a lot of the heat that it had going for it.
Sure.
And then eventually, it ended up just getting canceled.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the hard thing, I guess, with some of these characters, that you can bring in a big-name creator or big-name artist and launch it really well. But then what do you do after issue 12 and those creators leave and they move on to something else?
Right. And it's not a character like a Spider-Man or a Superman or a Batman, where the character itself is so ubiquitous that even if you go a year or two not necessarily telling the strongest stories you've ever told, you're still going to ship a certain number of books on the name value of that character. I feel like, you know, Iron Fist doesn't have the immediate recognizability of Mickey Mouse the way that, you know, Spider-Man, Superman, Batman do. So it does become, by extension, creator and execution dependent in a way that some of the bigger, like, mainstay Avengers characters maybe are not month to month.
Yeah, and it's just, I feel like they, certainly with the Netflix and the series going on, I feel like you want to put a lot of really good attention on there to get those creators on there, but then it's just like, how do you also maintain that? You can never have a awesome roster of creators that are just going to be always available to, like, fill in for each other as one moves on to the next. You can't just, like, be lucky enough to get Ed Brubaker. Oh, Matt Fraction. Oh, you know, get Brian Michael Bendis. You know, there's, at some point, none of them are going to be available, and then you're going to end up with just some kind of, and he could be a great writer, but just has no really, he's not really well known.
Right.
And some people will just kind of like, well, I'm going to skip off then if it's somebody I've never heard of, no matter how great he is.
But then you're right. And I feel like every so often, though, you come across a writer like, say, like a Jeff Lemire, who feels like he's writing an infinite number of books at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll pick up a book and I'll be flipping through and I'll be like, this is pretty great. Who's writing this one? Lemire? How is he writing this many scripts within a month? I feel like you need more guys like that guy, who you can apparently just plug in any place and he'll give you something while he's also given 7-8 other books at the same time as attention.
Yeah. For you, are you willing to take a shot on, are you loyal enough to the character that if a big name moves off the title and somebody else comes in that you really haven't heard of before, are you willing to stick it out for a few issues, or are you going to just jump immediately?
So the way I go about consuming most of my media, whether it's a TV show or comic books, if I've been liking it up until this point, I will do almost everything within my power, within reason, to give a new creative team the benefit of the doubt. Show I really love switches showrunners. Yeah, I'm a little bummed that the showrunner's moving, but let's see what this new person does. If I get a season or two in with this new showrunner and it's actively hurting me, then I have to jump ship. By extension, same thing with a comic book. Of course, I'm going to stay on this because I want to see not just what new threads that they can weave, but how are they going to pick up the threads? Say we're 20 issues into a book. How are we going to keep some of the previous threads alive? Or are we? I mean, I think those are interesting things to track, to see how one creator picks up where another left off. sometimes it works out beautifully, and other times it hurts a little bit. But I always feel guilty. I was talking to a buddy of mine about this earlier today. I always feel really guilty about dropping a book I'm reading, especially if the book is legitimately, if it's all right. You know what I mean? Like, if there's nothing egregiously, noticeably wrong with it, there's always a certain amount of guilt associated with that for me, because I'm crazy, I guess.
No, I can understand that.
Well, I feel like a lot of people, even if it's not totally hitting the sweet spot for me personally, a lot of people worked on this thing. So I want to keep seeing, like, maybe it'll get me. It had me before. Maybe it'll get me back. So sometimes I stick on something longer than maybe I should because I'm being real hopeful.
No, and I feel like that's harder today with the how much a book costs now.
How much it costs, and how many are legitimately good to great. There are a lot of real solid books out right now, and you're right, the expense of it, $3 an issue is fine if you're only interested in one or two books a week. But once you start getting, it's like there's like 7, 8, 9, 10 books that I think are real good right now, and it adds up. It does.
No, and it's one thing to say, like, I'm going to spend, you know, $9.99 for Hulu or Netflix, but you've got all this content to enjoy. So, but when you look at paying like $3.99, sometimes $4.99 for just one issue of a comic, that's a lot of money to invest on just one particular story. And if it's not doing it for you, that's, I can understand why you'd rather just, I'm going to break away from this title rather than just kind of ride it out.
Right, but then it's like I try in my head. The reason I feel bad is it's like it costs that much because, unfortunately, comic books cost a bunch to produce. You know, you may not, for a single issue of a comic book, you're not looking at hundreds of millions of dollars like you are with the next Avengers movie, but you're looking at substantial costs to get a number of books printed and shipped into stores, and those costs are rising, which is why you're seeing the cost as a consumer go up as well. And it's not like they're doing it to rip off the consumer, you know what I mean? It's just, unfortunately, it's the reality of the marketplace. They're not trying to take more from us than they need to keep the business going. So again, like, guilt, dude. I got a weird, like, a profound guilt complex about dropping comics that I've been on, because it's like, oh, but they legitimately need this money.
Well, yeah, but then also you get into, like, as we've talked about before with the crossovers, where sometimes it does feel like a cash grab with the amount of, like, ancillary series that they generate around them.
Yes, sure, that's not unfair. But then I also try, this is me being benefit of the doubt guy. All right. I do try and go, if they are doing cash grabs, right, consider the fact that they might really need that cash. I feel like even though Marvel is owned by the Walt Disney Corporation, I don't know how much of the yearly budget Disney is pumping into the comic book arm of Marvel. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it's a ton and it's all being foolishly squandered, but it doesn't look that way to me from where I'm sitting. Now, again, I don't know. Somebody tell me something that I don't...
You'd feel like they should be nurturing that to some extent because that's basically their IP generator.
Right.
So it's like, you know, treat that well, get really great people to tell stories about these characters, and that's where you can draw inspiration from for the continuing films that you want to set.
It's interesting because to a large extent, now we're at a point where, like, the last 10 years or so, going into 2018, when we get Infinity War, it'll be 10 years since Iron Man. This first decade of this model of telling comic book stories in film has had 75 years, in some cases, better part of a century of material to pull from to tell the best versions of these stories. Now, going forward, there's no reason that the comics branch and the film branch can't be working more and more closely together. They're timing certain releases, it seems like. But you can go to some of those writers and really get, like, you can have your whole movie told on the page for far less than it would cost to produce on screen. And you can say, well, there's a movie here. Or, well, there's not quite a movie here yet, without having to figure all of that out, like, in post, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I feel now that Marvel, even though they're the source of inspiration for these films, now they're very much following the studios, where they want to make sure that they tailor their books to whatever the studio's doing with these characters. So so that when you go after release of a film, you can go into a store and see
right.
something that very much resembles what you're seeing on the screen.
And now that I'm thinking about it some more, didn't they for a while before Feige moved away from the rest of Marvel with the movie branch, didn't they have the Marvel Creative Committee, which was a little bit like working more closely with some of these writers, and didn't it make everybody a little bit grumpy?
Yes.
So maybe I should walk back everything I just said, because we tried a version of that and it didn't quite work.
No, that's true. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's almost like, you know, you get to, when do you want to nitpick to be, you know, totally Marvel Universe comic correct? And when do you like, all right, for the sake of a story and for this other medium, I got to let go of some of these attachments to some of these story points or character developments, because it's going to be something better could be done in a film.
Right, and I guess it's got to get tough because you're dealing with not just these massive intellectual properties, and when you're translating them to film, millions and millions of dollars. You're also, these are all human beings. Like, they're all created by humans, all this human beings trying to manage personalities, and there's egos and things like that, and then things get a little more complicated to navigate.
And I feel like the one that suffers the if we're talking about TV series for a second, is like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Because I feel like they have such potential. There's a rich, wide range of Marvel characters, both your heroes and villains, that you could tap into. And especially for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., a lot of, like, come on, you've got the Grizzly. You've got somebody like
Grizzly.
That. Stiltman. You got somebody like
yes.
him. That's like, throw in some of these fun villains for them to take on. And I feel like, I don't know whether it's because now the film side is like, you know, hey, we don't know, any of these ones could be a potential person that we could end up blowing up into either a bad guy or just, you know, being a villain in one of the films, or a potential hero, and could lead their own franchise. So I feel like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has to just like...
Are you suggesting that Kevin Feige and the Russo brothers don't care about the Absorbing Man?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, but which is a shame, because he's a cool villain.
He is.
Yeah.
He can be. Again, another character that is very much, you put the right creative team behind Absorbing Man, and you could make Absorbing Man work.
That's true.
But I see your point, but I mean, I think that's why this year, I think S.H.I.E.L.D. has been very strong. And I think the addition of characters like Ghost Rider, the addition of a lot of LMD business, made it feel a lot more like, yes, we are now... It's weird to say we're now leaning hard into the Marvel Universe in a way we haven't before, because the last couple of years have been very Inhumans heavy.
Mm.
But this felt to me like, all right, we're actually really going to run hard with a lot of this stuff, more so than we have in the past.
Now, speaking of television and film, also this week on Jimmy Kimmel Live, was it last night, I believe, they released the second trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, dude.
Yes, where you get to see finally Kurt Russell as the human embodiment of Ego, the living planet, which hopefully in the film we will get to see him as his true version.
I feel like you don't cast Kurt Russell as a character called Ego, the living planet, and make a big deal about how the living planet is part of his name if we're never going to see his actual planetary form.
I want to see a big planet with Kurt Russell's face on
it. With the beard?
Yes.
Yes.
We've got a little bit of the trailer. Steve's going to play it for us here.
Hope you're ready. It'll be here any minute. Is that a rifle?
You don't know what a rifle looks like?
It's just swords were your thing and guns were mine. But I guess we're both doing guns now. I just didn't know that.
Well, that's intense.
Oh, look at that. So if that's exciting you there, then you've got a lot of great stuff coming your way in May.
However bad I'm feeling in a day, this can't, the marketing campaign for this movie is the greatest pick me up that is available to me at this point. From the first, it's been two full trailers and then that Super Bowl spot.
Yes.
And again, much like the campaign for the first movie, very music heavy. And of course, the first movie immediately got the Hooked on a Feeling mm-hmm. song stuck in everybody's head. Used it in, I think, every trailer, I believe.
Yeah.
Used it in the earliest teaser for this one as well. But then in the first full trailer, we got Fox on the Run by The Suite, which, sidebar, everybody made a big deal about the marketing campaign for Suicide Squad, which was admittedly great campaign, also very music heavy. But much was also made about how it felt a little bit like, if you wanted to be cynical about it, they were just cribbing the style of the Guardians of the Galaxy marketing campaign. Now, if you remember, the song Ballroom Blitz by The Suite was also heavily featured in the Suicide Squad marketing campaign. So the joy that I felt when I realized it could not be an accident that this marketing team picked a song from the same album to lead their campaign with, it felt very much like except no substitutes,
yes,
type of thing. Then, of course, using the chain, the Fleetwood Mac song in the Super Bowl spot and this one as well, like, for me, it drove me immediately back to the Rumors album. Now, I don't know if you're a Fleetwood Mac guy.
I admit, no.
Okay, so I advise you strongly, and anyone who's listening, if you haven't heard the Rumors album in its entirety, just go pick it up, Spotify it, something. Treat yourself, because if there isn't a religion that has been founded on the basis of this album, there should be. It's very good, Frank.
All right, I will take your word for it.
But I'm crazy excited about this movie, and we don't know a huge amount about the plot, which I greatly appreciate, because Marvel seems to be one of the few studios that knows how to market really well without, for lack of a better phrase, blowing the entire wad in the trailers.
Very true.
What we don't know too much about what the villain's actual motivations are beyond the villains are Aisha and Taserface.
I guess.
Yes, and we know that Taserface basically usurps Yondu as leader of the Ravagers because they find him to be a weak leader since he refused to kill Peter Quill.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure what Aisha's whole deal is. I believe that she hires the Guardians of the Galaxy to deal with that big monster at the beginning of the trailer because they now have a reputation as people who can get stuff done. And then maybe, I don't know, maybe like Rocket steals from them or something and then they have to run away.
No.
I don't know exactly, but I'm so excited. This stuff, Marvel Studios has proven that they know exactly what they're doing. They can take these smaller properties that non-comic book fans would probably shrug real hard at and turn them into massive hits. First Guardians of the Galaxy is like one of my most beloved films possibly ever. Dude, like I'm there opening night probably twice.
Wow, twice on opening night. Look at you.
Maybe not, but at least once. At least once, and then probably the next day.
Don't, come on. Twice on opening night, man. Go big or go home, Lex.
All right. Two and a half times, and the third time through, midway, I'm just going to be like, this is too good, I can't, and I'm going to leave.
The one thing I like about Yondu, though, is they're finally giving him the bigger fin on his head, which I thought that was the thing I liked least about his interpretation in the first film.
Didn't have a big enough fin?
No, it was just like this little, like, you know, just like just a little bump on his head. Like, that's not it. If I see Yondu, I want to see the awesome, cool.
He evolved.
I guess.
I wonder if it's like James Gunn had to prove that he could really sell this movie and these characters before they let him put the big fin on Yondu. So that was the one thing. It's like, James, you can have all of this money and all of these characters. We'll let you put Howard the Duck at the end. You don't get the big fin first time out the gate.
Because that would be a bridge too far.
Yes.
And making you believe about a raccoon, a talking raccoon, and a giant tree.
Yeah, like they're not going to buy the talking raccoon, the giant tree man, and big fin head guy in the same movie.
You got to draw a line in the sand, James. I'm sorry.
We're not there yet, guy. Like, we just made the Avengers happen a couple years ago. Slow your roll.
But I am jazzed about it. I guess there have been rumors that perhaps Adam Warlock would be showing up, but I think those have been discounted.
There was that video, not video, it was an image, I think maybe Instagram, James Gunn put up of himself holding Mjolnir.
Yes.
So people started to speculate that could Thor make an appearance, and then James Gunn was very emphatic about how no Avengers will appear in this movie. So then, of course, people started going, Beta Ray Bill? Maybe?
Oh.
Maybe Frog Thor. Gosh.
Beta Ray Bill. Man, if you could see Beta Ray Bill. If we get to the point where Beta Ray Bill is in a Marvel film, hot dog. That would be awesome.
It's got to be coming, right? Unless Beta Ray Bill is somehow tied up with rights somewhere else, we'll get there eventually.
Because that is a really cool story to tell with Thor, to see somebody else pick up the hammer. I mean, you've seen the Vision do it, but to see somebody really take on the hammer of Thor and pick it up and use it, Yeah, I mean, I guess the difference is that, at least in the comic, when that happens, I mean, it's just that what sells it in the comic book version is that is a transformation aspect to it as well. So that takes you from just whatever your current state is, and then, you know, as Guardianifies you,
right?
Yeah, so from Donald Blake to Thor, from just a Beta Ray Bill to, of course, awesome, super cool Thor looking Beta Ray Bill.
If Ragnarok wraps up this Thor trilogy, since we seem to be getting trilogies for all of our core Avengers except Hulk, obviously, because the solo movie rights are still tied up with Universal, we're getting these little trilogies within this mega franchise. Once we wrap this Thor trilogy, maybe, since it sounds like Natalie Portman's not coming back for this one, maybe she'll look at it, be like, oh, this is quite good. And then they'll be able to talk her into coming back and doing Jane Foster Thor as a movie.
Ah, that's all right.
I would watch. You would watch that? I would watch that.
Well, I would not. I'd love to see a Jane Foster Thor movie. I don't need to see it with Natalie Portman. You can find, you can recast that. You can recast Jane Foster, and I'm totally fine with that.
I could live with it, but there's a part of me that's just like, guys, like, get, just let Natalie Portman be the main hero in one of these movies, just one time.
I don't know. She didn't blow me away in the first two, so
not her fault, I believe. Not her fault. I think she wasn't given all that much to do except stand there and think about how pretty Thor is in between, like, science jargon. So I think give her the hammer, man, and I think she could crush it.
All right. I'd be curious to see if they could get her back. I wonder if she would be interested in doing that.
Well, that would be the main X factor, is like whether or not Natalie Portman, who doesn't really need a superhero movie at this point, would want to come back and do it. I would go see it.
All right. Now, one last series that we're also going to discuss too, as it's leading into our Wolverine talk, is Old Man Logan is getting to meet the Maestro in the series right now with Ember, issue 25.
So, have you been reading this Old Man Logan series?
I have not.
Okay, so maybe this is a way we can use this to segue a little bit into our main conversation, because I'm not fully caught up. I've read the first, I want to say 10 issues of it, having only just relatively recently read the original Old Man Logan for the first time. Mark Millar's obviously very famous Wolverine story. It's pretty good, but what I think is interesting, and of course it's a no-brainer way to keep this incarnation of Logan around, is it involves him ending up back in the present of the Marvel Universe. But this Marvel Universe, as it currently exists in comics, is not the Marvel Universe as this Logan remembers it from when he was young, from when he was Wolverine in his prime. So you get a lot of not just a lot, Man Out of Time, but Man out of his own timeline, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So watching him trying to reconcile him being in this era, but it's also not his past anymore, is pretty interesting.
I mean, we've talked about this, I think, off air. The fact that they killed off Wolverine a few years ago. And yeah, Marvel will do that at some points. They will take characters off the board for a little while.
Remind me, how did Wolverine die? Because when it happened, I remember a buddy of mine was keeping up with a bunch of the X books, and I knew it was happening because it was a big, it was a big story. Every time one of the big two was like, "We're killing somebody," it's like, tell the whole press like a month in advance. And I remember him telling me when it happened, and I remember going, "Huh, I guess that would do it," but I don't remember what it was.
He got encased in adamantium.
That sounds right.
Yes.
I guess that would do it.
Yeah.
Least if he's not dead at that point, he'd be functionally dead. You couldn't move at all.
No. So he is caught in there in some respect. So
is he... How did they... Do you remember this? Because I didn't actually read this story.
Yeah,
so
neither.
How'd they... Okay. Do you know an explanation? Because now I'm going, if he was just encased in adamantium, they didn't like fill him with adamantium like Deathstrike in X2, right? Because
no.
I see how that could kill him. But if he's just encased in it, wouldn't he just be stuck in there?
I mean, I guess with this healing factor, if you're
wouldn't he be in horrible agony but not dying? Like, not suffocating and not starving? Or if he does, wouldn't he regenerate and have to do it again?
Then he's just living in some, like, eternal torment. But, I mean, because certainly the Marvel Universe has ways to open up that adamantium.
Well, sure.
Go to Reed Richards. He'll be able to... Well, I'll go to Reed Richards off the table right now. But find Tony Stark.
Go
somebody.
Find Evil Reed. He can do it.
Yeah.
He comes in slices.
That's right. There you go. But I feel like with him kind of taken off the table for a while, we didn't... It's like, now we have Old Man Logan. It's like, I'd rather have a Marvel Universe maybe without a Wolverine. Other than Laura Kinney, we've got her.
And I really like that. I like that book, and I like that character a lot.
No, for sure. But it's like, so that's great. If you want to pass it on to somebody else to kind of take the mantle. But Logan, as we know, to still be around as an older version, even if it's from an alternate timeline and an alternate future timeline, I should say. But it's like, how can I miss Wolverine if we just have essentially that same character with a few modifications still hanging around the Marvel Universe?
Right, which makes some sense. But it feels to me a little bit, having read some of this series, obviously it's set very much in the present Marvel Universe. You've got Logan's confusion about the fact that Thor is now a lady, for example. Mm-hmm. He's like, Thor was, when was this? I don't know what's, you know. It's set very much in the Marvel Universe of now, but it's removed enough from the main continuity that I didn't find myself thinking about that aspect of it too much. It feels like it's set in its own little bubble, much in the way that, say, you know, like the Vision book that recently ran. And even actually, Vision is even more so in its own little bubble because there are fewer references to the broader current continuity. But same basic idea, as far as it feels like you could read this book and only this book, and you wouldn't you wouldn't need anything else to fill in the information. You, I mean, maybe if you haven't picked up a Marvel comic in about a decade, you'll be as confused as Logan that Thor is a lady. But you could do it, and it's not... I don't see Old Man Logan popping up in too many other titles, is my point.
Yeah, I mean, so far it's only just been Old Man Logan, Wolverine with Laura Kinney.
For an issue or two, he did pop up.
And then just the X-Men titles. But we haven't seen him, like, be back with the Avengers or anything like that. Really haven't seen him cross back over into the main Marvel Universe so much.
Well, and the X-Men books have been largely sidelined recently, no? In favor of the Inhumans, which has seems to have a lot, depends on who you ask, but seems to have a lot to do with what's happening in movies and TV, and Fox has the X-Men rights, and it seemed like, well, if we can't make these movies, we're going to bury these characters. And then there had to have been a moment of... But, like, literally everybody knows who the X-Men are. We can't bury these characters. So it sounds, too, like we're actually going to start to see some of the X-books get folded back in a little more.
Yeah, they're doing a big, almost like their version of Rebirth for the X-Men titles, with X-Men Blue and X-Men Gold, kind of call back to the 90s kind of era when they were kind of separated into two different teams. But I feel like that, I've always, that decision to kind of sideline these characters, you know, for whatever, it just, you know, and I think editorial will always like, no, we're not deliberately doing that, because who's going to ever admit to wanting to do that? But the idea that, again, comic books, they make a fraction of what a TV show can generate in terms of income for a studio, or let alone a feature film. To think that this small amount of readers that a comic book has, that if you actually produce great quality series... is gonna like affect like how many who's gonna go watch these films or TV shows, like, so if you decide to stop that series, it's not like, well, all right, I guess I'll never watch these characters again now. Nobody's gonna do that,
right?
So I feel like, why are you even why not? People clearly have an interest in these characters. Tell good stories about them. At least make your 100,000 copies of this book that you're gonna be putting out.
Right. And it does seem a little bit too like you're seeing the response to this idea of trying to sideline them happening within the narratives of some of the books now. I mean, of course, the most on the nose example being there is literally an X-Men versus Inhumans title that's running at the moment. Oof, have you read it?
Well,
I haven't read it. I've been letting the issues stack up. I haven't actually read it.
I read the other one right before that too, where you get to find out what really happened to Cyclops.
Oh, what really happened to Cyclops?
I don't want to spoil it for you.
Okay.
I'll just say it's not great.
Is it better or worse than X-Men The Last Stand?
Ah, worse.
Ooh.
Yeah, worse.
Ooh.
Yeah, only because it's like, come on, comics, I thought you knew better than this.
Come on, comics, you used to be cool. What happened?
So, as we've been talking about Logan there, kind of branching into a wider range of Wolverine-centric topics.
Yeah,
here.
So where does Wolverine fit into everything that we've been talking about outside of his old man incarnation?
Well, for you, I mean, for as little of Wolverine, I guess, that you've read, in terms of, you've read Old Man Logan, but in terms of just, good old... Earth 616, as we like to say.
I've read Old Man Logan. I've read years ago. I read Frank Miller's Logan Goes to Japan, which is not the title, but that's the title in my head.
I reread that today. Leading up into this, just like, it's been a while since I've read this, and man, it's an enjoyable read.
Yeah.
I mean, which is not surprising, given that it's Chris Claremont and Frank Miller, kind of at their prime Claremont and Millerness, doing that. But I will ask the same question that I asked in regards to Iron Fist. Do you like Wolverine as more of a solo person, or do you like him better when he's in the team dynamic?
So it's a slightly tough question for me to answer, because most of my experience with Wolverine in the comics has been these stories are very Wolverine-centric. All of the ones that I know the best are largely about it's not just that he is incidentally on his own. A lot of them are specifically about how he is on his own and how he needs to be separate from everybody else and why he believes that is. That's the version I'm most familiar with. I would say, however, that that's not the most fun version of the dude. To me, the most fun version of the dude, even though it's the version I have less experience with, is the one where he's the same guy, the same, like, gruff, brash, like, little Tasmanian devil person who chomps on his cigars, but he's throwing that at other characters. And he's forcing other characters to respond to him. Like, Wolverine making other people uncomfortable might be my favorite Wolverine.
Yeah, there was, certainly with, he's introduced in an issue of Hulk by Len Wein. So introduced there, then gets brought into X-Men. Since he's Canadian, the all-new Uncanny X-Men are kind of more of an international team. So it's like, great, we have Wolverine from Canada. That's a great addition to this whole thing. After the Giant Size X-Men, Chris Claremont comes on with Dave Cockrum, and then eventually John Byrne joins Chris Claremont for that nice, like, really kind of, don't know, like, I mean, I think, like, when you think of X-Men, a lot of people will refer back to those Claremont Byrne issues. It's just sort of like the textbook X-Men stuff.
Was that where, yeah, I mean, and Chris Claremont, that's, of course, a legendary name in association, yes, with the X titles. Is that where Wolverine's origin came from?
No, so that
because I know the origin, having not actually read a specific origin story in the books. I still know what the origin, I mean, I've seen the movies like everybody else. Oh, yeah. I know Weapon X program, adamantium claws, add that to his healing factor, makes him basically indestructible, etc.
Yeah, those actually came later. So Wolverine was always kind of shrouded in mystery about when he first came on. You didn't know much about his backstory at all. And certainly Chris Claremont had one interpretation, which you see, like if you remember from Frank Miller Goes to Japan, more of that kind of savage.
Frank Miller Goes to Japan, yes, which I would also read.
That's kind of that's, you know, that person that has that beast within them, but is trying to be better than that.
Yes.
But he kind of had a very different view of what Wolverine should be than John Byrne did. That's where they kind of butted head in terms of interpretation, where Chris Claremont saw him on that side, John Byrne saw Wolverine as if Kitty Pryde could walk in one day and just ask him, like, do you have any milk? And he would just pop a claw on her and kill her.
Because, okay,
you never knew what could possibly set him off.
Right.
He could just, you know, go berserk.
Berserk at any moment, right.
Yes. For you, which interpretation do you think is a more enjoyable one for Wolverine?
So I am very much drawn to, Wolverine aside, in characters in fiction in general, I find myself drawn to the idea of a character who views themselves as a monster, but does everything within their power to fight those parts of themselves. What that says about me, I will leave up to you, Frank, and the listeners. But I am frequently drawn to those types of characters. Having said that, my favorite Wolverine is still the one that makes everyone uncomfortable and pops, does the poof, snicked, and like just goes for it.
Yeah.
That tends to be the most. And yes, it's very much in the same way I think what draws a lot of people to Batman isn't even, oh, I could be that guy. It's, look at that dude kick that other dude in the face. It's the same, like, very base, visceral, instant gratification of watching a dude with powers ostensibly fighting for good pop the claws and go to town on somebody ostensibly evil.
Well, it's like, because Wolverine really wasn't the breakout character. I feel like the Dark Phoenix saga was the one issue where Wolverine stands alone, and that was, like, I feel like the first time that fans got to really see what Wolverine, like, the character was kind of capable of, like the cool parts of him. And I feel like that was a moment that people started really, like, whoa, Wolverine's really cool, let's do this.
Yeah.
And then only further solidified by the Wolverine series that Frank Miller and Chris Claremont did, that you really kind of rounded out those elements of what we think of as Wolverine. He's always fighting ninjas. He's got this, you know, strong Japanese background to him. Yes. Those are the other kind of elements that really added to it, that really made kind of Wolverine.
Is he a thing with Jean Grey in the comics to the extent that they are a thing in the movies, or was that something that was such a thing in the movies because they really like Hugh Jackman in that role and they wanted to make it the Wolverine show?
They kind of teased it, but they never went to the extent, really, that in the comics, they never went to the extent that they did in the film.
Because he's real fixated on Jean Grey in those movies.
Yes. I mean, there's been always a kind of that kind of tension between him and Jean and Scott in terms of that, and Jean is certainly drawn to both of them for various different reasons, but ultimately at the end of the day in the comics, her heart belongs to Scott. It was never going to be like,
sure,
I'm never going to give Wolverine really a chance.
Right.
You know, and so as you're talking about, like, the rest of his origins, like, certainly Barry Windsor-Smith did the Weapon X program.
Okay, so when was that in relation to the, yes, like, when Claremont first came on
so
board
Claremont
and had his great era?
There. Then they did, he was still writing the series when Barry Windsor-Smith did it in Marvel Comics Presents. It was serialized, the Weapon X saga. And that's when he introduced all the stuff about the Weapon X program, the backstory about getting injected with adamantium. But that's all you really knew of at that point. So you knew that he was kind of like a spy.
Okay, had they introduced Stryker at that point? Or did Stryker come later?
I think Stryker at that point? I got to reread those to see if Stryker was... I think Stryker was at that point.
Because it could have been them, but like a lot of these characters, some big comic book characters have their origins basically mapped out right from the very beginning, and they've remained relatively unchanged. And a lot of other characters, what has come to be the quote-unquote official canonical origin story is really a summation of a few different origin stories having their elements built on top of one another.
Yeah, and I think Wolverine definitely falls into that, because the idea was they never wanted to say where Wolverine was born. His, you know, other than the furthest you ever went back was the Weapon X program, and then Chris Claremont and Jim Lee did a few issues back set in World War II, where it was Captain America, Wolverine, and Black Widow when they first met for the first time. Which is that's a cool story with awesome Jim Lee art. But that was about as far back as you went. You knew that he was a very long-lived character. But then all of a sudden, the X-Men films start coming on the horizon. And then Marvel came down and says, you know, if you're going to continue to do X-Men films, and Wolverine is a popular character, they're going to want to tell his origin story. And would we rather have us tell his origin story as Marvel Comics, or do we want to just turn it over to the film division and really have no say about what they decide is Wolverine's origin? So that's when they came out with the origin miniseries that Paul Jenkins and Adam Kubert. Yeah, I think it was Adam Kubert, which one of the Kubert brothers. I always get confused with Andy and Adam, but I believe it was Adam Kubert did that. So that was like that 6-part origin series where then it went back to Wolverine as a young child. As James
Howlett.
Yes.
That's where that, because that was going to be my next question, is like, so we know, everybody knows that his name is Logan, but his name is also not Logan. It's also James Howlett. And my next question was going to be, when did that happen? So that was as relatively recently as I thought it was.
Yeah, back, gosh, like around there, like 2000s, right, early 2000? Like, gosh, because it came out, I believe, slightly before the X-Men movie came out. So the
original X-Men movie, okay.
The original one. So again, to be able to kind of like, no, we want to cement what his origin is as Marvel Comics. Since we created this character, we want to be able to say it and not turn it over to film writers like coming up with their idea,
sure,
of where Wolverine came from. So, I mean, so, yeah, but I also wonder, because they really haven't spent that much time in Wolverine's origins in the film, other than the Weapon X program.
They spent a lot of time with him thinking about it, him talking about it, and him saying, I'm going to find out the answers, but like... Nah, well, we go next two. We do go back to the Weapon X facility. Mm-hmm. I feel like we spend and we see, obviously, there is the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie, but I think maybe the less said there.
That's a rough. That is rough. You know, the X-Men's origin story. It's like, I mean, I guess if somebody had to tell it, I guess you want Marvel Comics to do it, but it's still not like. If I had to go back and read, like, seminal Wolverine stories, it's not one I'm going to gravitate towards.
Well, so, okay, then what is your Wolverine story of choice? Of the seminal Wolverine stories, what is the one you are most likely to gravitate towards?
Well, certainly the Frank Miller, Chris Claremont one. That's a really strong one. There is also the Dark Phoenix saga. That's where I feel like there's some good elements inside there. The one storyline in X-Men that I don't enjoy is the when Wolverine, it's called Fatal Attractions, that whole big kind of crossover event they do there. That's where Magneto draws the adamantium out of Wolverine.
Yeah, yes.
And
yes.
So for the longest time, he just had his bones. Because that's when you realize that, no, the claws weren't just forged from the Weapon X program. They actually just laced adamantium onto
over his bones.
Claws.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool to find out that he actually had bone claws. But then... there was also that part where he, because the adamantium was gone, that he started reverting into this almost like primitive like man. It was weird. So he became like, he started losing his intelligence and his grasp on humanity.
I don't think like this that's creature. How adamantium works.
No, that was a weird kind of status quo for Wolverine for a while. But eventually he got his act together. Then eventually got adamantium injected back into him to come back to the Wolverine that we know and love.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, him as like kind of like a doggish man, one of my least favorite interpretations of Wolverine.
Okay, interesting. What about Wolverine in other media? Whether it is the Hugh Jackman incarnation that we see in the movies from Bryan Singer's original X-Men through to the upcoming Logan, or whether it's all across the various animated iterations of the X-Men that we've seen over the years, certainly from the 90s cartoon forward, are there particular stories told there that you are drawn to, or do you not really jive with any of it?
No, I mean, you know, it's because I feel like the X-Men cartoon from the 90s was such just basically just reinterpreting the comic book stories that they were based on. So I feel like, you know, for those, if you like those, then you more than likely you already like the original comics that they were based on.
Sure.
Then you had X-Men Evolutions, where Wolverine was now like a teacher. Everybody else was younger except for him and Storm.
That's right.
And Professor X, but all the other X-Men were all young kids. So that was fine.
I remember seeing some of that one and thinking, this is fine. Why are they different ages though?
Yeah, that, and yeah, all of a sudden Wolverine's more of the teacher, which is like, that's kind of weird. But then they also did Wolverine and the X-Men, where it kind of takes place also in the future and then the present day as well. And yeah, that was That was fine.
Okay.
It was fine.
It was fine.
Yeah. But I feel like, you know, Hugh Jackman, great. I mean, his performance in the role is great. The stories that he's had to carry, nothing that great.
I think there are some genuinely very good X-Men movies that have been made. I think there are a few that are not so great, and there are a few that are fine.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Logan, fantastic. I mean, it definitely,
you've already seen it.
I've already seen it, and so it's a great conclusion. And the only thing that'll frustrate you is that it took him this long to get it right.
Sure.
But if you want to see Wolverine getting, you finally get to see what a man with adamantium claws is like when he goes and fights people. You're going to get a chance to see that.
That's music to my ears.
It earns the hard R.
How would you compare it, having seen it? I'm going as of this recording, I'm going tomorrow night. How would you compare it to any other X-Men movies? Like, let's look at the ones that are generally considered to be the best. Better or worse than X2?
Better.
Better. Okay, better or worse than First Class?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm because they have Havoc, all of a sudden be Scott Summers' older brother. I discount that, so that's going to knock it down. That always frustrates me. The great performances in there. I think if I had to rank it, I would put Logan. I guess maybe Logan, Days of Future Past. No, actually, First Class, Days of Future Past.
Okay, so Logan, but you would say then Logan is your number one
of the X-Men films. Yes.
What if we include Deadpool?
You know, Deadpool's great, but the fact that Deadpool's never been one of my favorite characters.
Okay.
It's a really good film, for sure.
So it's like it was a great movie, and you got the added surprise of, oh my god, they made a great Deadpool movie, never expected it.
Yes.
But, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like what you're saying is with Logan, they made a great movie out of this incarnation of Wolverine, and that payoff after what, a decade plus
17 years,
almost two decades,
yes,
of waiting for that, was it sublime?
It was great. And it's just a nice way to wrap up Hugh Jackman's run as Wolverine, for
yeah,
sure. You will not be disappointed. And I think it just goes to show, like, I think the future of the X-Men franchise should be not in the big ones, because I feel like when they have to juggle so many cast members, so many different characters, a lot of them just get dropped on the floor or get neglected, or you end up like Psylocke with like one line of dialogue.
But Frank, she flipped through the air, it looked super cool.
But I think Deadpool and Logan will show you, if you make films for less money, you have passionate people that have a really strong idea about those characters, let them loose on them and tell their story, I think you're going to be much more successful with those films going forward.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we're getting close to wrapping up here on the Comic Book Exchange. Look at how time flies when we're talking Wolverine.
Yes, and they are one last little bit it was news, but now it's just a nice little bow we can put on it. They are now actively teasing the return of Wolverine proper into the main books, into the continuity of the universe. So they are, as you alluded to, presumably going to cut open that adamantium and see what shape he's in.
But admittedly, that does not excite me, like the return of Thor, whenever the Fantastic Four gets brought back, because we've had a version of Logan already running around. So it's like, great, I'm excited. It'd be nice to have him back, but also I haven't had that opportunity to really miss him, that I'm like, yes, get him back. Get me excited.
Well, one of them, it feels like at some point then one of them has to die, right? It's got to be like Superman in the DC books right now. It's like, yeah, we had the old Superman come back and meet the new Superman, but for that to happen, the new Superman had to literally disintegrate.
Goodbye, old man Logan. Yeah. Goodbye.
Well, this sad day
That's
for
right.
old man Logan. But he'll be with his family again.
That's true.
Yeah,
look at that. Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Comic Book Exchange. You know what? We've had a great conversation. We hope you've enjoyed it as well. Again, you can comment down below about all your thoughts about Wolverine, anything that we talked about too in our earlier movie, our kind of little news segment as well. If you want to continue the conversation with us, though, even after this show is over, Lex, where can they find you?
I am all over social media at TheLexMichael.
That's right. Like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Lex Cup is empty. He needs those to live. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. Folks, we'll see you back here next week with an all-new episode of the Comic Book Exchange right here on Book Circle Online.
From managing editor Jason Squamata, executive producers Maria Menounos, Phil Svitek, and Kevin Undergaro, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Book Circle Online. For more discussion, go to bookcircleonline.com. And if you have comments, questions, or book title suggestions, write us at info@bookcircleonline.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this is Book Circle Online. BCO, join the circle.